Hi, folks. I'm Dakota Cohen. Thank you so much for checking out the Building Your Homestead podcast, where I talk with expert guests about agriculture, health, economics, technology, philosophy, and other topics that I believe will help us to peacefully exit the increasing tyranny of our world and start building a parallel system, one homestead at a time. Whether it's like a wild conspiracy theory or, you know, something that's just like, hey, this is like, this just happened, like say the lockdowns a few years ago, whenever I come up against one of those problems and I ask myself, okay, so what would I do if one, none, or all of this were true? And the answer is always like, basically keep doing what I'm doing, you know, look after myself, grow a garden, you know, raise animals, you know, grow nutrient dense food, be a producer, make things of value. Every time I've ever come across any issue in the world, that's what leads me back to this. What if I had a crystal ball and I could look into the future and I knew with absolute certainty that you know what, the corruption or there's an asteroid or a pole reversal, what, there's something that's going to come in whatever 10, 15, 20 years from now that it's not going to make any difference. There's nothing I could have done to prevent it. What would I do even then? And it's still the same thing.
Welcome to the Business Bitcoinization Show, the show dedicated to helping you enrich your life and grow your business with Bitcoin, the hardest money on planet Earth. I'm your host, Josh Friedemann, and our guest today is Dakota Cohen, who is a regenerative farmer, homestead designer, and freedom maximalist. We're going to be talking about his business, buildingyourhomestead.com today, as well as some things you need to be thinking about if you're interested in building a homestead in the future. Of course, before we get to our interview with Dakota, we do have this week's Bitcoin Meetup Spotlight. And even before that, I want to thank those who have been supporting the podcast on Fountain in the last week. Thanks to those who have been streaming sats to the podcast, including No Waste BTC Signs, user 562-40419, and user 215-88970. Also, thanks to user 483-92758, who sent a boost that said, good one, about last week's episode with Pierre Corbin from Flash. If you would like to support the show as well, you can listen on the Fountain app and either stream sats as you listen, or you can send a boost. And if you include a message with that boost, I'll be sure to read it on the show. For this week's Bitcoin Meetup, we're going to Alberta, Canada, and the Edmonton Bitcoin Meetup. The Edmonton Bitcoin Meetup is open to anyone and everyone interested in learning, networking, developing, or investing in Bitcoin. Whether you've been in the space for a decade or are just curious, come hang out and learn something new. Join fellow Bitcoiners for the next meetup on March 21st, starting at 7 p.m. for an engaging question and answer session on Bitcoin. Located at Code Jam Cafe Hackspace, this event is designed to deepen understanding, exchange insights, and foster connections within their growing community. Space is limited, so please only RSVP if you genuinely plan on attending. You can find the Edmonton Bitcoin Meetup on Twitter at YEG_Bitcoin or on their Meetup page. Those links are down below, along with a link to the Oshi app, which you can use to find a Bitcoin Meetup near you. Now, we're going to get to our interview with Dakota right after this. Dakota, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Josh.
So I'd like to start off every single interview with a few questions that help us to get to know you a little bit better and to give us some insight for our own lives. Are you ready for these?
You bet, man.
When and how did you first learn about Bitcoin?
So it's kind of a funny story. I first really learned about cryptocurrency, I'll say. I thought it was all the same thing. Probably back in, you know, the... in 2018, something like that. I never really got into it. I saw it as a tool that, you know, the government overlords could potentially use against us. So I just kind of stayed away from it. But then in 2021, I actually co-founded a company with one of the creators of Ethereum. Mm. And our goal was to create a cryptocurrency that would liberate humanity from the decay of our legacy financial systems by incentivizing the regeneration of Earth's ecosystems. So that was kind of our mission statement for the company. But after about a year of fighting with my colleagues about what a money would have to look like in order to achieve that vision, I started to realize that that perfect money had already been created, and it was Bitcoin. So kind of a long way around, but I started to realize that there's a massive difference between, you know, Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, particularly Ethereum. And now I'm a Bitcoin maxi myself.
So that raises a lot of questions in my mind that I'm going to table for now so we can get to question number two, which is, sure, what's an insight or fact about Bitcoin that you wish everyone understood?
Yeah, for me, I think even if Bitcoin turns out to be some kind of a deep state psyop or something like that, I am so convinced that Bitcoin has the correct philosophy that, you know, even like we have two options. We can stay in our current financial system, which is guaranteed to be corrupt. We know that it doesn't work. Or we can join a community that, you know, even if there is some way that there's a backdoor, you know, code or some way it's hacked in the future that, you know, people haven't found yet. To me, it doesn't matter because the community itself is so anti-fragile. And so even if there is something that comes up, the philosophy of, you know, Austrian economics that's just embedded into the Bitcoin community, it'll only make us stronger if there ever is any weakness. That's you know, I've heard people say that, you know, once it hits 21 million, Satoshi's face is going to pop up and it's going to laugh. It's like, well, even if it does that, I don't care because the communities is what really brings me to this.
Question number three, what's the Bitcoin resource you most recommend to other people?
Sorry, it was the resource that woke me up to while I was working with you know, one of the co-founders of Ethereum there. It was Saif Edina Moussa's books, The Fiat Standard and The Bitcoin Standard. They're just absolutely fantastic. And I can't recommend them enough.
Beyond Bitcoin, what's a resource, tool, or idea that's been helpful to you or your business recently?
So I would say, you know, Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged. It's my all-time favorite. It is a fiction book, but it's currently becoming more and more like a nonfiction, you know, by the day. Mm-hmm. And it's literally the blueprint for, you know, that our company here at, you know, buildingyourhomestead.com, that's literally our blueprint for how, you know, we want to help others to, you know, basically go on strike, exit the system and build the new one.
Create Galt's Gulch.
Exactly. So our company before this was called Building Your Gulch, but very few people knew what it was. So we did a little refresh on the name and now it's just Building Your Homestead.
Excellent. Now we have what we call our final arbitrary but insightful question. And it's this: as a general life principle, is it better to ask why or why not?
Yeah, I love this question. You gave me these a few days ago, so I've been kind of ruminating on it. And I actually think why is both these questions are important, but I think why is the kind of the thing that comes first. And there's a great quote that I came across that was, perfection is achieved not when there's nothing more to add, but when there's nothing left to take away. So I think that really, you know, distills down, but taking it to a more kind of philosophical level, because I believe that objective reality exists, I would say that we first have to ask why to try to understand what objective reality is, versus if we're constantly asking why not, it makes the assumption that, you know, that whatever exists in reality doesn't have to be that way. So I think there's a difference between the metaphysical and the man-made. If you're dealing with something that's man-made, absolutely ask, you know, why not? But if you're dealing with, you know, something in nature, in the real world, you have to ask, why is this here? And start from there as your kind of foundation.
All right, Dakota, I've told you this already, but just for the context that might be helpful for listeners, I'm a huge fan of your content. I discovered your work years ago connected to homesteading when I was first getting interested in regenerative farming, regenerative practices. And you were one of the first people I found on YouTube. I don't even quite know how, but excellent content there. You've been doing this for a long time. And then, you know, I reached out to Building Your Homestead on Orange Pill app and quickly got connected with you. It was cool to hear that you're now a Bitcoiner. So it seems like we've kind of gotten into Bitcoin about the same time. And I love what you're doing. One thing that Bitcoiners are interested in, I think, is making sure they're set up for success. They have, you know, a resilient ecosystem in their lives, and a homestead can be a key part of that. So I'd love to hear a little bit about how you got into it, you know, years ago before being a Bitcoiner, and what you're doing now with Building Your Homestead.
Yeah. So I was lucky enough to be, you know, born and raised on a 250-acre mixed organic farm up in Alberta, Canada here. I was really just born and raised into this kind of lifestyle. We've always grown our own food. We've always been self-sufficient. But it was really kind of after I got out of high school in around 2000, I graduated in 2010 and 2012, just it became apparent to me that you know, the problems of the world, once I was no longer just busy with, you know, the next test or the next sports game or whatever it was, I started to see all these problems in the world and how many of them kind of rooted back to, you know, how our agriculture was set up. And so that was kind of the my first kind of experience down the rabbit hole was through just the problems of industrial agriculture. And the more I got into that, the more I started to see that these problems were, you know, linked to other things. And then I went down the money rabbit hole and, you know, various other kind of dead end conspiracies and things like that. And I'm grateful I did all of it. But no matter what over those years, I developed kind of what I call like my philosophical razor. So I don't know if you've heard of, you know, the Occam's razor, which is, you know, the simplest solution is usually the correct one. I think there's, I can't remember, there's another guy who says, you know, that which can be adequately explained by stupidity should never be attributed to evil. Is another one. So my own razor has been basically, you know, whenever I come up against a problem that I see in the world, whether it's like a wild conspiracy theory or, you know, something that's just like, hey, this just happened, like say the lockdowns a few years ago. Mm. Whenever I come up against one of those problems and I ask myself, okay, so what would I do if one, none, or all of this were true? And the answer is always like, basically keep doing what I'm doing, you know, look after myself, grow a garden, you know, raise animals, you know, grow nutrient dense food, be a producer, make things of value. And so just every time I've ever come across any issue in the world, that's what leads me back to this. And the final kind of razor for me is, okay, what if I had a crystal ball and I could look into the future and I knew with absolute certainty that, you know what, there's the corruption or there's an asteroid or a pole reversal, there's something that's going to come in whatever, 10, 15, 20 years from now, that it's not going to make any difference. There's nothing I could have done to prevent it. What would I do even then? And it's still the same thing. I would still live the life that I'm doing right now, work with the kind of people that I'm working with. So that's kind of how I got into this world and how I keep staying in it is, to summarize it, one of the kind of my first teachers, he's passed away now, Bill Mollison, said that, you know, gardening is permaculture is a revolution disguised as gardening. And that's really what I see homesteading is. It's a revolution disguised as just, you know, growing fruits and vegetables and animals.
Now, before we get into what you're doing right now with building your homestead, how you can help people, mm-hmm. I feel like homesteading is a increasingly used term. It's a popular term. I feel like it can cover a lot of things.
Yeah.
How would you define it? What does it include? And maybe also if it would be helpful for people, what does it not include?
Yeah. So I think it'd be, you know, faster to talk about what it doesn't include, which I mm-hmm. think is basically anything to do with the fiat world, you know, any of these centralized systems, that we're seeing today. So it's all about, you know, taking personal responsibility. It's about, so you can adopt a homesteading mindset. If you live in an apartment building, you know, you can grow things on your balcony. You can grow things inside. You can start to adopt this, you know, it's about industriousness, creativity, self-sufficiency, you know, preparedness, you know, maybe a little bit of stoicism mixed in there. And also fun. Like it's, you're going out into kind of uncharted territories. You're kind of a pioneer out in a space where, you know, there's not a lot of other people. So I think Bitcoiners, even if they don't live on land and aren't growing, you know, fruits and vegetables and animals, I think they're still have this kind of homesteading ethos. And yeah, that's what this is really about to me. And that's why we chose that name is because we could have, you know, I've been trained in regenerative agriculture and holistic management and permaculture and organic farm. I've done all those things, but to me, the one word that really captures this, the bit of the rebelliousness along with all the other things is this idea of homesteading.
So I think it would be interesting to hear about what your offer is and what you guys help people to do. And part of this, you know, we've already had this conversation offline at a different time, but I think it would be helpful for people to begin thinking through, is this something that is helpful for me in the future, even if it's not right now? This is a type mm-hmm. of thing that as Bitcoin's price continues to appreciate significantly, people are going to have more money. They may want to go and create their own homestead, but you know, there also might be people listening right now that are primed for what you have to offer. So if you would just explain kind of what your main offer is, how you can help people think through what homesteading could look like for them.
Yeah, absolutely. So basically our goal is to help homesteaders anywhere in the world to design and develop land for freedom, purpose, and abundance. So we can do that for you, we can do it with you, or you can do it yourself. So I've written a book that outlines, you know, my 5-step process to design and develop land anywhere in the world. We do hourly consulting that can just be on a one-off basis, or, you know, retainer packages that are more cost-effective, or we also do homestead design packages where, you know, we'll work with you for basically two months straight, where we're helping you to clarify your goals, helping you to, you know, diagnose the property you already have, or help you to identify what property you need, come up with a comprehensive design for how all the different elements on that property will work synergistically together, just like an ecosystem, come up with an implementation plan for that and a long-term monitoring plan to make sure that you're, you know, what are the early warning indicators that, you know, you're heading in the right direction and you should speed up, or that you should start to, you know, pump the brakes a bit. So we can really meet people anywhere they're at in that journey, whether they want that kind of the self-discovery, the DIY, or they want someone to really take the reins and do a lot of the heavy lifting for them.
So especially for the package where you're helping people to plan things out to a significant degree, how much land would it be helpful to have for that to make sense for someone? Like, are we talking a 5 or 10 acre thing? Or are we talking a 100 acre situation?
Yeah. So right now we've got clients that have been, you know, in that, you know, 4 to 5 acre range up to, 500 acres. But I've also worked with clients on, you know, a 30,000 acre ranches. So, you know, we can kind of do anywhere in between. In terms of where, you know, we can really maximize the value of like our homestead design package, it really should be, you know, a couple acres in a rural environment because of the restrictions of, you know, property development in urbans or peri-urban areas. There's really not much you can do. And the sites are quite simple, where it's, if you only got, you know, 1,000 square foot lawn, it's like, well, you know, probably just book a call and in an hour we can, you know, give you all the advice that you'd need. But as soon as you get onto these, you know, larger, you know, 1, 2, 3+ acre properties, it can get quite complex to figure out how to optimize the whatever piece of ground you've got.
So what are the things, if people are interested in buying land in the future? Obviously, if you have land already, then you have what you have. But if you're buying land in the future, what should you be looking for? Are there some kind of general principles that considerations people should bring to the table when they're looking to buy land?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a matrix that I call the kind of order of operations, or your property resources. And just like, you know, Bitcoiners or math lovers, I'm sure. So you'll remember the PEDMIS or BEDMIS back in algebra, which is like parentheses, exponents, division, multiplication, so on. So that order of operations, if you've got a math problem, if you don't do it in that order, you won't get the right answer. And so in property development, it's the same thing, but it starts with geography, then it goes to climate, then it goes to water, access, structures, fencing, flora, fauna, business, technology, and soils. And the things at the top are the hardest to change and the most impactful on everything beneath them. And the things that are at the bottom are the easiest to change and the least impactful on the things above them. So they all interconnect and they all influence each other, but there is that kind of that order of operations, or as another fellow who kind of developed a similar version of this, P.A. Yeomans called it a scale of permanence. It's really important that you think about the elements that are higher on the list. So your geography and climate and water and access and structures, those are really influential, and you have to get them right. You have to also think about what your goals are too, because if your goals are to grow, you know, subtropical fruits and you want to have, you know, bananas and mangoes and avocados and figs, you can do that in a greenhouse in the subarctic area. And I know guys that are doing it. It's really labor intensive and it's expensive. So that might help to shift kind of where you're looking at buying. And then so doing an analysis of those things, clarifying your goals, coming up with what I call a list of non-negotiables. So if you know that, okay, I need to buy land within a 100-mile radius of this city because that's where my work is or my family or whatever it is, just the more things that you can come up with to reduce the possibility, the more constraints, the better. And then when you get kind of zoom in, you know, closer to the property itself, what I look for is something with, in terms of geography, like a little bit of slope. So I like terrain, and you want some slope and some flat spots. Ideally, you've got, you know, a creek or some kind of water body that's on it or flowing, ideally flowing through it, starting at the high point and flowing down, because, you know, then you can use all kinds of amazing gravity water systems. It's really expensive and difficult to pump water uphill, but it's effortless to get it to flow down. Ideally there's, you know, decent soils, you've got some trees, some grasses, some open land that's good for gardening. Surprisingly, if your budget allows, it doesn't have a lot of structures or fences. Most people, or even access, most roads, buildings, and fences are put in the wrong place or they're built improperly, and it can cost, you know, more money to get rid of them than it can just to build them properly in the right amount of the right thing at the right time in the right place. So yeah, I know that's a lot to wrap your head around, but that's kind of my matrix when I start to look at any piece of land or advise someone as they're looking to buy a new piece.
That's very helpful. And I'm sure there will be a couple people at least that will, you know, go back and re-listen to that portion, because there's a whole lot there. The water portion kind of stuck out to me. I don't know how much you do this or how much you've done the research, but it's something that I've tried to look into, and the amount of resources out there are not that great. The idea of getting, of using hydro electricity and powering your house with it, is that, how much water do you have to have flowing to do that in a way that you don't have to have too many concerns about being able to use electricity when you want to at your house?
Yeah. So living off grid can be challenging. But I do think, micro hydro stuff like that, is actually quite, it's surprising how little you need, to be able to live a good life. But with that, it's not so much the volume of water, it's the head pressure. So like the distance it falls. For example, you know, I've worked with clients who were able to develop I think it was like a 1200 watt system, just a small turbine, and it fit in like a garden shed style building, that only took, it was like a 2-inch, maybe 2 or 3-inch pipe. And that basically ran their whole property. Now, the thing is, it was falling, I think 200 feet before it got to that shed. And so that's the tricky part. Cause if you get that high pressure, you don't need a lot of volume. If you don't have the pressure, you need a lot of volume to flow through. But sadly, the biggest restriction on things like micro hydro isn't the whether or not you've got the water or the head pressure, it's the bureaucrats. It's whether or not, you know, someone's gonna come in and put a lock on your doors because you put something in the creek that wasn't supposed to be there. So that's usually the bigger limiting factor. And if we go back to my order of operations matrix, geography, you know, land use bylaw or covenants or, you know, any kind of restrictions that are regional based, those are things that I really stress folks understand before they buy a property, because that's where most of the headaches come from, is actually what you're not allowed to do on your property because some bureaucrat said so.
One of the things that attracted me most about your content was how much of a systems thinker you are, like your hub and spoke system, at least at the property where you're filming this content. I don't know how much you do that with all the other, you know, your clients, but it's such a great process. It makes things as efficient as they can be. What are some things that people in general, you know, if you're looking to start a homestead, you've already mentioned, you know, some people might want to, you know, do like tropical fruits or something like that,
yeah,
in suboptimal places or places where it will require more work. In general, though, what are some things that a lot of people should be considering for a homestead that they're trying to kind of start from square one?
Yeah. So I would say probably one of the most underutilized elements on any homestead is animals. Like the amount of work and you know, value that you can get out of you know, just a few chickens or a few pigs or a dairy animal is just phenomenal. Like the amount of fertility they bring in, the amount of, you know, digging and scratching and rooting and pest management, and even just like quality of life. Like there's a reason people like to be out in nature and watch birds and, you know, look at, you know, a deer drinking from a stream of water. There's this kind of, I call it, you know, vicarious well-being that we get from just being in diverse ecosystems. And I think a lot of people are intimidated by, you know, incorporating animal systems into their properties. But I think a lot of that is due to the fact that they've been so industrialized and there's been so much fear mongering that's been put out by, you know, all the diseases and illnesses that, you know, whatever animal you're looking at getting can have. Like if you get any book on almost any animal, whether it's bees or chickens or pigs or dairy cows, doesn't matter. The first 10 pages of the book will be all the things that the cow needs or the pig needs. And the other 90 pages of a 100-page book will be how to treat all the diseases that it gets. Mm-hmm. And what I found with you know, my work in systems thinking is that those diseases and pests are actually indicators that there's something out of balance in the ecosystem. And that if you address the root cause of those problems, you won't get those diseases and illnesses and pests. So like we've been organic since 1988, and we don't use any chemicals of any kind, no fertilizers, no drugs, no hormones, nothing, no vaccines. And it's actually really easy to raise animals this way, but you have to get the systems right. Like if the animals are living in their own crap or they're not rotationally grazed properly, you know, they are going to get those parasites and diseases, or if they don't have proper ventilation. But as long as you get the systems right, they become, you know, your most valuable employees on your property that can help you to accomplish, you know, so much goals, whether it's prepping your garden beds in the spring or helping to pull, you know, quack grass out of a garden bed, or just, you know, building the fertility anywhere on your property. So yeah, animal systems are just so misunderstood and undervalued. And however, if you don't get it right, you're basically running a bed and breakfast, and now you're working for your animals. And you don't have any time to do anything else because, you know, all the pigs got out again, or it's freezing and you know, I got to go give the animals water. And so now you're just basically a maid working for these animals. So that's the other piece that I think people get wrong, is they get into it and they want to get animals right away, and they don't have the systems for it. And it just results in drudgery.
Now, one thing I didn't ask about earlier that you had brought up is your book. I actually didn't realize that you had written a book, and that's on me. Is that something that someone could find on Amazon or wherever else, or is it primarily at your website?
No, it's on Amazon. There's also an Audible, an audio recording that you can get for it. There's also, you know, PDF versions, and it is quite high level. Like I want to stress that if folks are getting this book, it's not a It's not a how-to book for how to garden or how to, you know, dig, you know, water harvesting features or plant fruit trees. This is a systems approach to how do you design and develop land. It's not about technique. It's really about the strategy of it.
Well, I would highly recommend people check out your content on YouTube. There's just so much good stuff there, and it will cause you to believe in the organic approach. And I'm glad you brought that up earlier, because that's one of those things that I didn't even think to bring up, because that's just so much a part of the regenerative movement, but that's still so different than everything else. So I appreciate you bringing that up. And I want to get you some final thoughts in a minute on all we've talked about. Before that though, I'd be interested to maybe dig down briefly into some of your learnings from trying to create your own cryptocurrency and then realizing that Bitcoin was the answer. I don't know how much you want to get into that. And, you know, if you want to keep a surface level, that's okay. But, you know, what were you trying to do, and where did it fall short where Bitcoin doesn't?
I mentioned kind of our vision statement for the original company and why I signed up for it, which was to, you know, to liberate humanity from the decay of our legacy financial systems, while incentivizing the regeneration of Earth's ecosystems. So Cole's notes is we were going to develop a cryptocurrency that would be tied to the health of ecosystems. So we had we were working with satellite companies to come up with metrics where we could create a baseline measurement of the health of every square foot of planet Earth. And then as that land was regenerated via the metrics that we set, the landowners would be issued tokens. And so in the same way that, you know, when a gold miner goes out and mines gold, our society values that. And so they're incentivized to mine more gold. So on a surface level, it seemed like a good idea. But when we got into the weeds of like, how would this work and who would be allowed to compete and what would happen if people burned down the rainforest and then tried to regenerate it, and how would we create all these, like, can basically stop these bad actors. And then the biggest problem for me was, have you ever heard or seen the movie or read the book, The Watchmen?
I don't think so.
So it's a book about these like superheroes that.
I haven't seen the movie. I know what you're talking about now.
Okay. So it's a fantastic movie. And anyways, there's a question that someone paints on the side of a wall, basically as society's falling apart, and it's who watches the watchers. And really that was the biggest problem for me as we kind of dug into it. It was, I was starting to see how all of these things came back to, yeah, but like, what if we get corrupted, or what if we make a mistake? What if we set the wrong metric? What if we incentivize the wrong thing? What if we create a DAO and then the DAO gets taken over by Bill Gates or or whatever it was? And every kind of problem came in with like, well, we'll just give ourselves more power. And it started to snowball. And because of my understanding of, you know, the current fiat system, and even my colleagues had the same, you know, we've read the Creature from Jekyll Island and are familiar with how central banks work. I just started to see that we were literally just creating our own central bank and it was going to have all these problems. And so I really pulled back, thought through from base principles, like what would it have to be? It'd have to be totally decentralized from the start, and kind of worked my way through it. And, was getting a ton of resistance from my colleagues on this because it just seemed so crazy. And then when I read Seyfeddin Amos's book about what Bitcoin is and how it was created and just the ingeniousness behind it, it was like, well, this is already done. And not only that, is that by creating a hard money, it would lower people's time preference and the environmental problems would go away, because no one wants to crap in their own bed. And so if people have the ability to save for the future, they'll think long-term and they'll start to care for the planet. And so, you know, all of our schemes for how we were going to incentivize the right behavior started, I just saw it as like, this is dangerous, you know, at worst, and just ineffectual at best. And really all we need is just a sound financial system that no one can game, and everybody wins, including the, you know, us who are trying to, you know, do the right thing and build one of these systems. So yeah, that was kind of the long and the short of how it all came about. So I, as a result of pushing for these things and just getting set back, and eventually I started to realize that I think it was a bit more than ignorance, or a lack of understanding, you know, some of the associations that Ethereum has with organizations like the World Economic Forum and, you know, the current, they're literally building the central bank digital currencies. When I started to see those connections, I handed in my shares for the company and walked away because I wanted nothing to do with it.
Well, very interesting. Hopefully that will be instructive for some people who are listening either right now or in the future. Maybe share some final thoughts to finish up this episode, maybe some action steps you would recommend for people, as well as where people can go to find out more about what you guys are doing and maybe watch some of your content.
Yeah, you bet. So I think I mentioned it earlier in the podcast about how the homesteading is a revolution disguised as gardening. And I really think that's a critical piece that people that even I didn't understand for years. It's when we see these massive problems like, you know, the Federal Reserve and the political corruption and, you know, the corporatocracies and like all these things, these are big, you know, massive problems that are on a global level. And it seems like that there's nothing we can do about it. And what I've started to realize is that the only thing that keeps those systems going is our dependence on them. And so when we start to look after ourselves and become self-sufficient, when we don't need those systems anymore, they become irrelevant. They require our voluntary consent in order to continue. And so once we no longer need them, they will disappear on their own, or they will become so egregiously, immoral, as they are increasingly doing that. But even with things like the mandates that we saw a few years ago, now we're seeing in press conferences where they're saying, no, they were never mandatory. You know, we never forced anybody to take the shot or to do certain things. It was only suggestions. So I think it's important for people to realize that these systems are voluntary. They need our consent to continue to the extent that they are. And the best way is to be able to bite the hand you can't bite the hand that feeds you. So you have to learn how to feed yourself. Mm-hmm. And our society, our civilization rests on an agricultural basis. Like without that primary need met, there can't be the division of labor. And so, you know, it starts with even though it seems like it won't have that massive effect, you know, as we start to build out, you know, one homestead at a time, that's the revolution. And the best part is it's fun. You know, I like to say that no one wants to join your revolution if it sucks. and that's why I love Bitcoiners, because they're all about that quality of life, you know, lowering time preference and talking about how much fun it is and how much better our system is. We're not trying to guilt anyone into this or use fear or anything else. This is just, you know, live the best life you can, reduce your dependence on the system, and exit and build.
Excellent. Well, Dakota, I appreciate your time. Actually, you know what? You need to let people know where they can find out more about you.
Yeah. So if folks are resonating with this, kind of wherever you're at in your homesteading journey, whether you already have property or you're looking for it, or even if you still live in the city, you can go to buildingyourhomestead.com. We've got lots of free resources there, as well as, you know, our different services where we can, we can help you do it yourself. We can do it with you, or we can do it for you. And we'll help you build your homestead.
Excellent. Dakota, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. Thanks, Josh.
Well, friends, it's a wrap. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Business Bitcoinization Show. If you want to reach out to either me or Dakota, you can find those links down in the show notes, and definitely check out Dakota's YouTube channel as well. As always, keep building, keep growing, and until next time, keep living and leading well.
I hope you gained some actionable insights from this podcast about how you can fight the powers that shouldn't be by building your own homestead. If you did, please take the time to share this episode and click all those buttons to like, rate, and follow. This helps spread our message, it makes sure that you never miss an episode, and it sends a middle finger to globalists like Klaus Schwab. I also suggest that you sign up to my newsletters directly on my websites that are in the show notes. With the Government of Canada recently passing Bill C-11, the Online Streaming Act, the threat of me being censored or removed from mainstream media platforms like this one is becoming a reality. If that time ever comes, we can stay connected. Thanks again for listening, and take care until next time.